Money Psychology. Money Psychology.
Every time you reach for your wallet, check your bank balance, or make a financial decision, you're not just dealing with money, you're reliving every money lesson, fear, and belief you absorbed before you were old enough to understand what any of it meant. I'm Elliot Graves, and this is Money Psychology, where we explore how your earliest financial experiences created the money mindset that controls your financial life today. Welcome to Money Psychology. Money Psychology. Today we're talking about a group of people who experience one of the most profound life transformations imaginable, and yet we rarely discuss how that transformation rewires their relationship with money. We're talking about our military service members and veterans. It's a topic that, for me, hits close to home. My grandfather served for over 30 years. I saw firsthand how that life of structure, of mission first, of a guaranteed paycheck and housing, how it shaped every single financial decision he made for the rest of his life. There was a discipline there, but also a sort of insulation from the civilian financial world that was fascinating and sometimes a little challenging for the rest of the family to understand.
Yeah, and that's the core of it, isn't it? I have several close friends who transitioned out of the service, and I've watched them navigate this new landscape. One friend is the most meticulous budgeter I've ever met. Every dollar has a job, a holdover from his logistics training. Another struggles with the sheer number of choices after years of having so many of those choices made for him. It made me realize this isn't just about financial literacy. It's about a fundamental shift in one's entire money mindset.
Exactly. So, that brings us to the central question we're exploring today. How does a life defined by service, sacrifice, and structure sculpt a person's financial DNA? We're going to delve into that entire spectrum, from the hypervigilant saver to the high-risk investor seeking that adrenaline rush. We'll look at how the military's unique ecosystem of benefits and challenges can create financial habits that are incredibly powerful, but can also become pitfalls after the uniform comes off. This is a conversation about decoding that unique money behavior. It's about understanding the psychology behind the balance sheet for those who have served. So stick with us as we unpack the intricate and often unspoken financial legacy of military service. It's going to be a fascinating discussion. Let's start with that idea of insulation you mentioned. My grandfather, for him, the concept of saving for a rainy day was almost abstract. The military was the umbrella. If he got sick, there was a doctor. If he needed to move, the military paid for it. His paycheck was non-negotiable and utterly predictable. So, the financial muscles civilians are forced to build, navigating insurance marketplaces, negotiating salaries, building an emergency fund from scratch, his never fully developed. That is such a critical point. It's not a lack of intelligence or discipline, it's a lack of necessity. The military creates this incredibly robust, but closed, economic ecosystem. You have the commissary for groceries, the base exchange, the housing allowance, everything is streamlined. Then one day, you step out of that ecosystem, and suddenly you're not just choosing between two types of bread, you're choosing between 50, and you're also choosing a health insurance plan from 100 options, each with a different deductible and copay. It's a cognitive overload. It's the paradox of choice on an extreme scale. I saw it with one of my grandfather's friends who retired around the same time. He was a brilliant strategist, could manage logistics for thousands of soldiers, but he stood in a grocery aisle for 10 minutes, completely paralyzed by the sheer number of different pasta sauces. It wasn't about the sauce, of course. No, it never is. It was about the sudden, crushing weight of mundane decisions that he hadn't been required to make for decades. When your entire career is focused on high-stakes, life-or-death decisions, you delegate the small stuff. Or rather, the system delegates it for you. So when the high-stakes missions are gone, the small stuff suddenly feels monumentally heavy. So how does that translate into actual financial behavior? Does that paralysis lead to inaction?
or does it trigger an overcorrection?
I think it triggers both. And that's what creates this fascinating spectrum. On one end, you have the person who, as you said, overcorrects. They crave that loss structure. They become the most intense budgeters you've ever seen. They might use a spreadsheet that would make a CEO weep, tracking every single penny. It's not just about managing money. It's about building a fortress of certainty in a world that now feels terrifyingly uncertain. They're reimposing the command structure onto their finances. Every dollar is a soldier, and it has its orders. It's a way to regain a sense of control, precisely. But then you have the other end of that spectrum. The person who feels liberated from that rigid structure for the first time in their adult life. They've had their food, housing, and career path largely dictated to them. Now, they have a severance package or their first civilian salary, which might feel like a fortune, and no one telling them what to do with it. And that's where the high-risk behavior can come in. The sports car that suddenly appears in the driveway. That's the classic example, isn't it? The 20-year-old sergeant, who is responsible for $1 million of equipment, gets out and suddenly buys a $70,000 truck. To an outsider, it looks reckless. But psychologically, it can be one of the first major, independent, discretionary financial decisions they've ever made. It's an act of financial self-definition, sometimes a very costly one. There's also an element, I think, of trying to reclaim lost time. They've spent years, maybe decades, in a system that prioritizes the collective over the individual. That personal desire gets suppressed. So when the floodgates open, that suppressed desire comes roaring out, often in the form of spending. And it's often fueled by a lack of experience with things like compound interest or long-term investment horizons. The mission was always the next deployment, the next promotion. Thinking 20 or 30 years down the road to retirement is a completely different mental muscle. The immediate, tangible reward of that truck feels much more real than a hypothetical number in a 401k statement 30 years from now. That concept of the tangible reward, it makes me wonder how that plays out in the less tangible world of investing. You know, we talk about the truck because you can see it, you can touch it. But what happens when that same mindset approaches the stock market? Is the slow, steady, almost boring growth of an index fund just completely unappealing? It can be worse than unappealing. It can feel fundamentally wrong. Think about it. Military training is about objectives. Take that hill. Secure that perimeter. Complete the mission. There's a clear, definable, and often short-term goal. The feedback is immediate. Success or failure. The idea of putting money into something and then just letting it sit for 30 years, it runs counter to every instinct that's been honed in them. So they're looking for the financial equivalent of taking the hill. Precisely. And what looks like that? Day trading, speculative crypto, high risk, high reward ventures. It's an environment that offers a feedback loop they understand. There's a target, there's a strategy, you execute, and you see the result. Today, it provides that jolt of adrenaline that's suddenly missing from their life.
Wow.
So the portfolio becomes the new battlefield. That's an incredible insight. They're not just investing. They're engaging in a mission. And I imagine the language they use reflects that.
Oh, completely.
They talk about attacking a stock, finding alpha like it's intel on an enemy position. It's a way of translating this chaotic new world of civilian finance into a framework they mastered. But the market isn't a battlefield with clear rules of engagement. It's far more random, and the enemy isn't who you think it is. And that brings up a really concerning point. Who are they getting their intelligence from? In the service, information is vetted. It comes through a chain of command you are trained to trust implicitly. But in the financial world, it's the Wild West. Suddenly, you have a YouTube guru in a rented Lamborghini shouting about a guaranteed 10 times return on some obscure altcoin. To a civilian, there might be layers of skepticism. But for someone conditioned to trust the person who has their back, it can be incredibly seductive.
Yes, especially if that guru is also a veteran.
They use the language, they flash a picture of themselves in uniform. They talk about, this is a mission for our community. It taps directly into that powerful sense of camaraderie and shared identity. You're trusting the person, not the information. Because for your entire career, the person and the information were inextricably linked. Your commanding officer was the source of trusted intel. You didn't have to second guess it. Now, that instinct is being used against you. It's a perfect storm of vulnerability. You have this sudden influx of cash from a payout or a new salary, a deep-seated craving for structure and mission, and a hardwired instinct to trust people from your tribe. And the failure feels so much more personal, doesn't it? It's not just a bad investment. It's a betrayal. It's a mission failed. The psychological toll must be immense. It is, because they're not just losing money. They're losing a piece of that certainty and trust that was the bedrock of their entire world for years. And that loss can be far more devastating than any number on a bank statement. And that really is the heart of it. That devastation. We've spent this time mapping out the psychology, from the paralysis of choice to the search for a new mission in the markets. But it all comes back to trust. And when that's broken, especially by someone from your own tribe, it's a wound that goes so much deeper than just a financial loss. It really does. It's a betrayal of a core principle that was, for years, a survival mechanism. And I think, as we wrap this up, the most important takeaway for me is that we have to shift the conversation away from just financial literacy. That phrase feels inadequate for what we're talking about.
Inadequate how?
Because it sounds like that's exactly what's needed.
Well, it implies a lack of knowledge is the sole problem.
As if a 2-hour PowerPoint on compound interest would have prevented that veteran from trusting the guy who shared stories about being in the same battalion. The issue isn't a knowledge gap, it's a translation gap.
A translation gap.
Say more about that.
It's about helping veterans translate the incredible skills they already have. Discipline, risk assessment, long-term strategic planning, from a military context to a civilian financial one. The skill isn't missing. The language and the landscape are just alien. So, the mission objective changes. It's no longer secure the perimeter. It's secure your family's future. The underlying discipline is the same, but the application has to be recalibrated. You're not attacking the stock. You're building a defensive position for your retirement.
Exactly. It's about reframing. And maybe the most powerful thing we, as friends, family, or financial professionals can do is not to just give advice, but to help with that translation. To acknowledge the skills they bring to the table and help them see how those very strengths can make them incredibly successful investors and planners once they understand the new rules of engagement.
I think that's a perfect place to land. It's not about fixing a deficit. It's about honoring a unique experience and helping to channel its strengths into a new kind of mission.
It's a profound shift in perspective, and honestly, one I hadn't fully considered before this conversation.
For me, it underscores that you can't separate the money from the life. The experiences that shaped them are written into every financial decision they make.
Understanding that isn't just helpful, it's the only way to have a meaningful conversation about their financial future. The next time you make a financial decision that surprises you, whether it's an impulsive purchase or an overly cautious investment choice, ask yourself, whose voice am I hearing and what childhood memory might be driving this choice? Understanding your money psychology doesn't guarantee better financial decisions, but it's the first step toward making choices based on your current reality rather than your childhood fears and dreams.